Get on the bus, loser. We're going to the Australian outback and drag. Again, it's the 30-year anniversary of The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the groundbreaking film that shook the world as three queens on a road trip trekked across the Australian desert.
The groundbreaking film won an Oscar for fiercest costumes ever and helped drag go mainstream. Now, three decades later, after Priscilla, the big pink bus drove across the desert and into our hearts, the original cast is back together for a highly anticipated sequel.
Today, we take a look at how the world changed in the short time from the documentary film Paris is Burning scandalized movie screens to The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, becoming an international hit. It led to an appetite for similar films like Tu Wong Fu, Trick, and Girls Will Be Girls, always and forever.
Plus, a group of professional German rugby players plan on coming out as gay.
Republican George Santos is bringing his drag alter ego Katara Ravash back.
And comedian Jerry Seinfeld once again complains about cancel culture, making comedians too risk-averse to make an audience laugh.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Hey, lady. Yeah, you, lady, cursing at your life. You're a discontented mother and a regimented wife. I've no doubt you dream about the things you'll never do. But I wish someone had talked to me like I wanna talk to you. You know, I actually sang that for my friend Sheila Murthy, the performance artist, Filipino performance artist, at her wedding.
I'm so sorry she had to go through that.
She asked me to.
She asked you to go through that? Why?
Yeah, we were both huge fans of the movie Priscilla, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and she felt that the ping pong lady, as we called her at the time, was a huge star and that she almost risked upstaging the whole film.
Well, you know, that song sat on the shelf for many, many years before it was actually, I think they released it once and like it didn't do too well. And then they released it like 10 years later and then it did pretty well in the charts. But by the time it was in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, gosh, it must have been out in the wild for about 15 years.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to remember the cultural impact that that film had on our lives as queer people, on the mainstream and culture. It was just such a heartwarming, lovable film that not only, like, you know, had really important representation, even though you have three heterosexual men, Hugo Weaving.
Identifying.
Hugo Weaving, Guy Pearce, and Terrence
Stamp.
They, in their height of their careers, they were seen as heartthrobs. And so they were cast in this film. Believe it. Terrence Stamp. There's actually a song about
Zod.
Before he was Zod, he was like a hunk. And there was a song that's like, I'm in love with you, Terrence Stamp. You're so cute.
Oh,
Terrence
I think Lucy
Stamp.
Sings that or something.
Yeah, Lucille
like
Ball. That's how old Terrence Stamp is. And 30 years later, they're bringing this movie back.
Well, and Guy Pearce definitely was a heartthrob, but I don't think he was very well known, at least not to American audiences, because he was known from a soap opera.
Yeah, yeah.
But man, what a cutie he was, huh?
And he really managed to burn that all to the ground with Memento. I mean, you're like, am I turned on or do I just think he's
all
crazy?
All those tattoos.
Too many tattoos, you know? It's like every time I write my phone number or somebody's phone number in the back of my hand, I think about that movie now. Memento, you know?
Yeah, so you don't forget it.
Yeah, and then you're like,
I don't find that I write, it's like, since we have phones now, I don't write things on my body like I used to.
But you used to, right? It's like, you know, and it's like, you know, in the early 90s when Priscilla, Queen of the Desert came on the scene, like, a lot of our drag was just us going to thrift stores.
It was garbage.
Buying garbage and putting it on and being weird and, you know, very similar to what there were, you know, performers were doing in John Waters' films. Mm. And then there was another camp, which was, you know, the pageant queens that were more about creating an illusion. I'm not a drag queen. I'm a female illusionist.
It's female impersonator.
I'm an actor playing a role, you know. And it's only until, you know, recently, and I'm talking about, you know, 2008, 2009, that a lot of these performers like Coco Peru felt comfortable enough embracing the title of drag queen.
Because they were character actors.
They were like, I am not a drag queen. I am a actor. Well, I'm a comedian.
The success of RuPaul's Drag Race kind of like blew the door open on that kind of talk, I think, because like at that point in time, like this is what people understand what you're doing as drag, whether you want it to be like that or not.
Well, and for us, you know, we were comfortable in embracing being a drag queen because of the politics that John Waters and his films brought. Mm-hmm. Made us eager and excited to become drag queens. And certainly a film like Rocky Horror Picture Show and theatrical productions of the musical made it exciting to be a drag queen. People wanted to be called themselves drag queen. I wanted to call myself a drag queen.
It was still kind of like, even though, you know, Paris is Building came out and, in like the early 90s. And so people had a sense of that ball scene and people dressing up and performing and doing that kind of stuff. And then this came along. Well, RuPaul's song Supermodel came along, but was Supermodel really viewed? I mean, people that were queer knew it as like a gay song.
Well, here's a timeline, right? Yeah. So Paris is Burning, 1990. Mm-hmm. I consider it one of the greatest documentaries, like Pumping Iron or Grey Gardens. And when you have LGBTQ folks and documentaries, they go together like hollandaise sauce and asparagus, right? Then there's Vegas in Space, which was not released in a lot of theaters, but it was straight to video.
What year did that come out?
1991.
Okay.
And it's then Priscilla, Queen of the Desert came out in 1994. Mm-hmm. And that was a game changer because the type of drag it was showing, the type of costumes. Mm-hmm. And so you have these innovative costume designers, Tim Chappelle and Lizzie Gardner, who won the Oscar for best costumes, the fiercest costumes ever, and made us think, hey, we can use everyday objects and attach them to our bodies and make costumes out of that. So it made us think about things that normally didn't associate as a costume or as a piece of clothing or a wig even. And, you know, like in that scene where they're wearing those flowers, those plastic flowers as wigs, just, you know, a lot of people of the time, we just started thinking about like, well, what about making wigs out of aluminum foil? And so for me, like that became a big signature piece. And I got into museum exhibitions and performances as the aluminum foil queen.
Well, before that, because like drag, a lot of it was, like you said, female impersonation, but a lot of it was celebrity impersonation. You know, somebody who did Liza, they did Judy, they did Barbara, they did Diana Ross, Carol Channing, all those kinds of people. And so here's some drag that's coming around. It's taking things, everyday objects that are found around you, because the designer said we had no budget. We had no budget for these costumes. We couldn't afford anything. So we got these dollar sandals and we made dresses out of sandals because it was like the cheapest thing we can make. Because when you look at like, you know, Hollywood or Hollywood movies, you know, the budget for costuming can be quite extensive. You know, and some things is like it goes through the roof. But here I think they said it was just like it was some paltry sum, like $20,000 or something like that. It was like really like nothing.
I wish I had $20,000 put on a dress or something, you know. I
mean, well, to make a film,
you know. And it was an inexpensive for the time period indie film that, you know, won so many awards and opened up so many doors, you know. Even though Tu Wong Fu, a lot of people think of it as sort of a derivative film based on Priscilla the Queen of the Desert, you actually found out that that film was actually being made at the time.
Well, the script was around, so the people that made Tu Wong Fu were aware of it, and they understood what the storyline was. And at first, they were a little worried, but once they figured out what the storyline was, they were like, "Oh, our show is definitely different." And actually, you know, I feel like it's got more heart. You know, Tu Wong Fu.
You feel Tu Wong Fu is a more compassionate film than
I think so.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I think so. I think it's. I mean, if you put the two of them together, I think Tu Wong Fu is not as good as Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I mean, Tu Wong Fu is like, you know, I got to put it this way. It's you know, one of those theme parks that went out of business.
Now, don't get me wrong.
And you know, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert is like going to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just no comparison.
Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, you know, it's different because it's like it's exotic because it's Australia. So it's like it's a different culture. They're going through this, you know, these very colorful characters. They're in this purple bus. They're going through this very barren landscape. They're meeting up with some pretty just, you know, people of the earth, you know, miners in these small towns. And it's just
Aboriginal people. Yeah.
And dealing with, you know, Aboriginal people, and then having to confront like his wife and his child and things. And then Bernadette, who's a transgendered person.
A transgender character, yeah, played by Terrence Stamp, who played Neil before Zod from, mm-hmm, Superman 2.
Yeah.
Which I think is the best of all the Superman movies, you know. And even though it has some ridiculous plot lines in it, but, you know, Terrence Stamp as Bernadette is kind of the first time we see a sympathetic, relatable trans character that holds, mm-hmm, her own and stands up to bullies and falls in love, which is something that, mm-hmm, we hadn't seen before.
No. And I wonder how they're going to deal with that now. I mean, you know, because there's a lot of talk about trans representation, and Terrence isn't a trans person. So, like, what's this next film going to be? Are they going to detransition? Are they going to become a person that, like, the main plot line is trying to stop young kids from getting puberty blockers? I don't know what they're going to do.
Well, I, you know, the rest of the cast is not gay either.
Is he grandmothered into it or something?
You know? I would think that, you know, Terrence Stamp gets a
free pass.
Well, because, you know, a lot of those actors of the time.
Are we going to cancel this film?
No. you know, a lot of those actors at the time, they took a lot of risks because it was not even acceptable for heterosexual cisgendered actors to take on these roles. Mm-hmm. You know, think about like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. That was considered sort of breaking the standard.
Mm-hmm.
So not only were these roles not even being done, people didn't want to take on those roles because it felt it could hurt their careers.
And they were warned not to, yeah. Will Smith was warned not to play a gay character in the movie 6 Degrees of Separation. I mean, ended up going on to play that role, but like they kind of de-gayed it.
No, in fact, he fought against having same-sex kisses.
Oh,
and, you know, even with Tu Wong Fu, with Patrick Swayze and John Leguizamo, with John Leguizamo's famous for Mambo Mouth,
mm-hmm,
his one person show, where he had drag characters. So John Leguizamo came with street cred.
He was ready.
Yeah. And,
he was shaved head to toe.
Yeah. He was tucked and shaved and ready to go.
Even if he was going to be a little Latin boy in a dress.
Why are you crying, little Latin boy? But, you know, Wesley Snipes and Patrick Swayze, that was a big risk for them at the time. And I remember Patrick Swayze getting so upset at John Leguizamo that they broke into a fist fight on the set.
No way.
Yeah, because John Leguizamo was like, hey, I'm a performance artist. I'm a comedian. I'm being paid to play, to be playful, to be off the cuff. And Patrick Swayze was worried, and rightfully so, that John Leguizamo would upstage him.
Oh.
And also get more screen time than initially was written for his character.
Oh.
So it made it into a
sister down.
It made it into an ensemble as opposed to him being the star of the film.
Well, he was still the star of the show. I mean,
I don't see Tu Wong Fu as a you know, starring Patrick Swayze with his co-stars Wesley, mm-hmm, Snipes. I see it as the three, and you know the posters show it as an ensemble.
Well, who do you think of those three? Who enjoyed their role more? Was it Noxzema?
John Leguizamo enjoyed it.
I think Wesley Snipes really enjoyed being Noxzema. There's just something about that look in his eye, and he's like, I can get into this.
I can like this. John Leguizamo said, you know, of his two co-stars, that they were lifting weights up to the last minute. So they were all like showing up all jacked and, you know, roided out on the set because they're action movie stars. Mm. And he was just like, what the fuck are you guys doing? He's like, you're supposed to be drag queens, not wrestlers, you know. You look like a man.
Well, the thing is, like, if you're big and muscular and you put on a dress, you just look like a big woman.
Yeah.
You know?
And so, you know, with Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, those three, mm-hmm, Hugo Weaving, which is, you know, he's the villain in the Matrix movies, and Guy Pearce, soap opera hunk star, what everybody had a crush on, and Terrence Stamp, who played, you know, he was a super long established career heartthrob in his day, played Zod, the villain in Superman 2. You're looking at three hunks as well, who are being, you know, force feminized to some degree. And that was part of the appeal of these films.
Mm.
And, you know, so instead of being this giant, colossal disaster, from 1 year to the next, all these guys, you know, these bro gays, you know, mm-hmm. the ones who hang out at the gym like myself, I guess. And, you know, people who are like, wouldn't be caught near, let alone wearing drag. The following Halloween, everybody was in drag. Everybody was like, and to my friends were all like asking me, can you help me get up in drag? And I think both of those films, Tu Wong Fu and Priscilla, do drag queens a huge disservice. Because they portray drag queens as just poof, they put on the drag and it's ready to go.
Ready? No. They're shaving, tweezing, pulling, binding, plucking, tucking, and a little sucking.
Plucking, tucking, and sucking. No, drag. Good drag takes time. And at the time, I was invited to do a lot of things because people thought it was easy for me to dress up in drag, and I would take 2 hours to get dressed and ready, and then go to some thing like, you know, the kickoff of the gay and lesbian tour of the Chicago, city of Chicago history, and we weren't paid anything. Mm. Thanks a lot, Suki Delacroix. But, you know, and we were happy to do it because we were not accepted and we were not embraced, even by the gay and lesbian press or the communities or bars. There, a lot of these bars that were like, we're at RuPaul's Drag Race.
They didn't want drag queens in there.
They had signs that says, if you're not a performer, you cannot come into this bar in costume. Mm. They had signs like that. And now today they're all like, we love drag queens and RuPaul's drag. They never apologize for that. I'm salty.
And they never will.
They never did.
Just pretend it never happened.
Now, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, just like Tu Wong Fu, also shares the trope of the magic gaze. Mm. They show up, transform your boring little town, help you overcome relationship issues, and get your groove back, baby.
But that's what gays do. It's not, it's some gays.
I'm not doing that for any, listen, you can listen to this show or you can pay me, but I'm not doing this shit for free, okay?
wouldn't show up in a small town and save a woman from her abusive husband?
I mean, I'll try, but it's like, I'm going to get myself killed. And that's the thing, like, you know, with the exception of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the films have this very, like, kind of Disney quality of the dangers that LGBTQ plus people face. And so, you know, there's that scene where Guy Pearce is getting, you know, beaten up and out comes Bernadette and I believe that she saves his life. You know, the trans character is no pushover. She's the tough one.
Well, when you're trans, you gotta be tough.
And, you know, it's also sort of underscoring the violence that trans people face at the time and still do to this day, you know? So to me, I'm like, I wish that one of these films was like, showing, and I feel like RuPaul's Drag Race to some degree did that. It's like showing how long and what is it taxing it is to get ready in a costume. That people are like, I'm running late. I'm sorry. This is taking time. I can't get my eyelashes on. Oh my God, my bra is stuck. Ah, you know. So that's to me, like, I feel like the film doesn't live up to, you know, what it could be, and I'm interested in seeing what they do 30 years later.
Well, know? I think, you know, the kid was 8 years old at the time of that, and now it's 30 years.
The kid in the movie, Priscilla?
The kid in the movie, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Yeah. Now he's 38.
Oh, shit.
So probably has a kid of his own.
So probably, the new generation.
Yeah.
It's like, this time it's
going to
be
that gender nonconforming kid that wants to get on puberty blockers, and Bernadette's going to be like, no, no, no.
You think it's really going to be that kind of controversial thing?
I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what it's going to be. We'll see, though.
My friend Sheila Murthy and I, we adored Julia Cortez's character, the disgruntled bride, Cynthia Campos, who goes...
The ping pong lady.
The ping pong lady. She's not allowed to go to the clubs, because, and we find out later that she has a fetish, an obsession with putting ping pongs in her cooch and popping them out in the faces of all the patrons.
Well, that's how she met her husband. She was doing a show.
Yeah.
And then he liked her show because he, you know, he's an audience member.
He's a fan.
He's a fan. He's a fan of women, and he's a fan of women who do tricks.
Now, Julia Cortez later on went on to play the other villain in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers as a Rita Repulsa.
Did she ever shoot pinball?
I wish she would have.
ping pong balls at the kids.
But she did shoot flame balls and try to take over the universe and failed. Curses.
I had no idea that was her. Of course, I didn't really watch Power Rangers because I was a little.
But I was a fan of Julia Cortez. And you know, she never did anything after that.
No?
No. She was like, The movie is not good enough for me. You have little ping-a-ling. There's so many good lines from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Here's a line we'd like for you guys to remember, that Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you. For an ad-free experience, go to feastoffun.com/plus and access thousands of amazing shows made by Mark Feely and me, Fausto Fernos, and all our friends. And for another ad-free experience, they can go to
Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun. You get an ad-free experience. You don't get access to the archives like you do at Plus, but you do get the new shows.
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous people just like you, and by Shameless Care.
Imagine a world where the fear of STIs is a thing of the past. A world where you can truly be free. Sounds impossible? Not anymore. Let us take you back to the time when PrEP revolutionized HIV prevention. Remember the collective sigh of relief? The renewed sense of freedom? We're here to introduce you to a similar game changer, DoxyPep from Shameless Care.
Everyone's been talking about DoxyPep. Not surprising, given it's been proven to be up to 90% effective at curbing STIs like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis. Reputable media outlets are buzzing about it, and health professionals are stoked.
And where can you get your hands on this wonder drug? Shameless Care, of course. As a top telemedicine provider with board-certified physicians across all 50 states, we have one mission, making DoxyPep accessible and affordable.
No, we didn't invent DoxyPep, but we are your go-to place for getting it. The process is hassle-free. Answer some medical questions on our HIPAA-compliant online platform, and one of our physicians prescribes DoxyPep to you. Voila! It's shipped straight to your door in discreet packaging.
And here's the zinger. DoxyPep at Shameless Care is insanely affordable. Just $109 a year. Guess what that covers? Your online evaluation, the medication, and shipping.
So, are you ready to write your story? Ready to rediscover the joy of carefree intimacy? Visit shamelesscare.com/feasts, that's F-E-A-S-T-S, and take control of your sexual health. Once again, that's shamelesscare.com/feasts, plural feasts. Your liberation is awaiting. So now, 30 years later, they're going to be making another movie with us, with the original cast. I don't know if Julia Cortez is coming back. I would like to see her in it, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
And we don't even know. They found the bus, so they know where the bus is, and the bus is being restored. They think it might go into a motor museum in Australia. But, it would be, you know, the bus has got to come back in some way. And they're probably going to do some kind of road trip again, maybe back out to the hotel out in the middle of Alice Springs.
Yeah, I wonder what that's going to be like. You know, they're like, instead of being like, I was a lay girl, now it's like, I'm a Rue girl, you know.
They're probably going to be like that. People are going to be like, well, you are RuPaul. Why don't you audition for RuPaul's Drag Race? They'll be like, I'm older than RuPaul.
Listen, nobody bloody fucking likes ABBA or RuPaul's Drag Race, damn it. That's another line from the movie. Terrence Stamp turns, Bernadette turns to... one of the characters is like playing ABBA, and it's like, shut that fucking thing off. Everybody hates ABBA.
Well, it did give ABBA, like, people were interested in ABBA music again. And then Muriel's Wedding, which was another Australian film that came out around the same time, that also used a lot of ABBA stuff. So ABBA was in the zeitgeist in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the soundtrack to that film, I worked in this lesbian cafe, and we played it endlessly, you know, from... I've Never Been to Me by Charlene. And like, we were all lip syncing it. Go West by the Village People. Take a Letter, Maria. And Mamma Mia, of course, by ABBA. And I Love the Nightlife, I Will Survive. You know, and Shake Your Groove Thing by Peaches and Herb.
Gays just love the disco.
But the one song that really I feel steals the show too is... Vanessa Williams, Save the Best for Last.
Oh,
and 30 years later, in the title sequence at the very end, did they just have some drag queen wearing nothing, nude, lip syncing to that song.
Aww.
Sometimes the sun
She's still goes putting out music. The moon.
Well, 30 years later, saving for the best for last, Vanessa Williams is back doing a single about the legs are last to go.
That's what dancers say.
And you know, Michael Urie, her co-star from Ugly Betty, is in the video. And I wrote, when he shared it on social media, because we're friends, I said to him, I was like, get in the limousine, loser. We're making a music video. That's a reference to Mean Girls.
It is.
Man, there were so many good movies that came out as a result of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And look at this list here. Vegas in Space, that came before it. The Birdcage, 1996, 2 years later. Flawless with Jackie Beaton in it. Trick with Coco Peru. Billy's Hollywood Screen Kiss gave rise to Sean Hayes and was kind of the foundation for Will and Grace. And, of course, Girls Will Be Girls Always and Forever in 2003.
And there's a Girls Will Be Girls 2 somewhere out there.
It'll never happen.
It'll never happen?
No, they said they've lost all this shit.
It's lost on a computer somewhere.
It's in an alternate universe, unfortunately. If you want to see Girls Will Be Girls 2, the sequel, you have to buy a ticket and go see Coco Peru or Varla Jean Merman performing alone without their co-stars.
And it's just girl will be girl.
Yeah.
That's a good title for a show. She should steal that.
I don't know if they want to do that because they're very protective about it.
Yeah. You
know?
Well, they love it. People love that.
It's a great film, and it captures these three drag performers, you know, and John, Evie Harris was
Jack Plotnick.
Jack Plotnick captures him like they're just in their raw perfection, you know, and it's just like it was created during the writer strike. So there was all this free time for all these people and who weren't working.
Girls Will Be Girls.
Girls Will Be Girls. Girls Will Be Girls.
Okay.
And then, you know, it happened to get made and finished and people loved it. And so then they were like, oh my God, we weren't planning on doing a sequel. So they wrote, the director wrote a sequel and fell apart.
They filmed a lot of it.
Filmed some of it. Yeah. But I don't know if it was like as well produced as the original film. Mm. I got a vibe that it was like, you know, shot on an iPhone 8.
Hey, if Tangerine could be shot on an iPhone, why not?
That was another, it was an Oscar nominated film, shot on an iPhone. Can you imagine? And not your fancy modern iPhones, like a busted ass old iPhone that, you know, not even your grandma wants to use anymore.
Whatever year. I mean, listen, it was new technology when it came out.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
But I wonder if, like, if you pull up that Tangerine movie now and watch it with, you know, modern eyes, do you be like, oh my God, I can't believe
it. It'll be like I'm watching something through an Instagram filter, like maybe a Madonna video or something, you know?
Yeah, Madonna's going around doing a tour and everyone's like, it's finally, the plastic surgery settled. She's now looking like she used to.
Mm.
But I don't know. It's like I always wanted to see what Madonna would look like old and wrinkled, but we're not going to get that. So
do you really need it?
Yeah, because I'm old and wrinkled and I want to see myself.
Well, they're doing really wonders with these deep plane facelifts now. So it used to be like, you know, your skin would look stretched, it'd look morphed and stuff like that. Now they're going deep. They pull ligaments. They pull muscles. They really get it together. There's no reason to look like a freak anymore. I mean, look at, you know, they allegedly they all have it these days. Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, they just go in. And nowadays I was reading an article. They're recommending, because you heal better when you're younger, right? So they're recommending, like, where people used to go in and get facelifts at when they're 60. Like, people are getting them when they're like 40 now.
So I'm too late. It's too late for me.
Oh, yeah. It's way too late for you. You're just going to be an old hag. Old crone.
Fausto, come into my gingerbread house, children. I have some candy for you.
Mm.
You know, Lizzie Gardner, the costume designer who famously wore a dress made out of gold American Express cards.
Why do you pronounce her name like that?
Gardner? How does right pronounce? Gardner?
I would just say Gardner.
Oh, well, maybe it's French. She's a designer.
Gardening. I mean, maybe it is.
Yeah. Gardening. So she used 254 credit cards to make the dress. It was auctioned for charity for the price of $12,650. and it went to the American Foundation for AIDS Research.
I remember watching her wear that on the Oscars, and everybody was just amazed. They're like, wow, this is really, really cool.
Oh, and I, at the time I was thinking, I want to do that. And so I started collecting gay bathhouse cards to make a drag dress out of those.
And how many did you get?
I got like 14 of them, because I'd be like, hey.
So you made a belt?
No, I just lost them, you know, because I was like, at the time it was, you know, and you've lived with me and you've been my husband for a long time. Like, you've found bags of shit that I was going to make a dress with.
Hoarders. Hoarder.
But Lizzie Garnier said she was like, she was invited to go to the Oscars. They didn't think in a million years they would win. She was not prepared for that speech. And she's just like, I don't have any money. So what do I, she opened up her book of costume ideas for the film and used one of them that wasn't used, which was making a dress out of credit cards.
Wow.
And like, you know, Cosmopolitan put her dress on the worst dress list. So fuck you, Cosmo. You don't know shit.
Anti-drag haters.
I know. And she got a lot of like negative backlash for the dress and for her success. And she said she basically felt like she was not welcome in the film industry or in theatrical industry in Australia.
I wonder why that was.
Just people were jealous. And so she had to move to the United States, she said, and pursue her career over here.
You won an Oscar. Get out.
Yeah. I wonder if like Australians are jealous of like, you know, Olivia Newton-John or, you know.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Well, she's no longer with us, but. You know, I guess like the filmmaker who made this, Priscilla, he's made another movie with Olivia and John, one of her last films. So it's something to look forward to. I don't know. Probably it'll be out in theaters like in a couple of years or so.
I don't know. Depending on how long. Hopefully next year or something like that.
Or next week.
Everybody's on board. They're all coming back for it. So we'll see.
Yeah. Just when you were
going to. Get your cinchers out.
When you were going to quit. Your Netflix subscription, now they're bringing this shit back.
This will get a theatrical release.
I hope so.
Yeah. I'm sure. They say they're going to try to give RuPaul a run for her money.
Yeah, by paying her lots of money to do a cameo in it.
You think she'll be in it?
Probably. She'll be like, Bernadette, I have one thing to say. You better work, Jan Brady. Oops, wrong film.
I bet you they're going to come across a kangaroo out in the outback, and they're just going to call it Kangaroo Paul, and that's going
to
be
that's
it.
That's terrible. You should apologize to the audience for that bad joke.
Is it a bad joke?
You know, Jerry Seinfeld said nothing's funny anymore because people are too scared to say things that hurt and offend others. He's like, the liberal media and the left wings and all that stuff. And I was like, to some degree, like, I remember those kind of people being around back in the 90s when Seinfeld was on television and, you know, tisking me for my attempt to make humor out of difficult situations. And they still to this day. And, you know, Jerry Seinfeld, you have a lot of money. You know, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
You were just you have two successful TV shows, Curb Your Enthusiasm and Seinfeld.
It's Jerry. He's not.
He was the guest star on the final episode.
It's not his series.
Well, it's part of his legacy.
Yes,
as a comedian. And Larry David is amazing. And part of it is like, you know, complaining that there's no more Larry Davids. And I'm like, What have you done? Larry David's still here. What have you done to cultivate more Larry Davids into this world? Nothing. So don't be happy you had one.
I think that, you know, the people that interview these comedians like to talk about this because they feel like it gets a lot of traction. So at times they're just kind of like repeating themselves. So it's the same thing over and over again, just talking about like cancel culture. You can't tell jokes anymore. I mean, how long have we been listening to this conversation? I mean, they've been talking about cancel culture for a decade now.
And who's really been canceled?
You know,
not Jerry Seinfeld.
No, just because nobody wants to see him in a sitcom right now.
He doesn't want to be in this. What's the matter with cancel culture? I don't want to do the sitcom. I don't want to wear the pirate shirt. Listen, he's rich. He's retired. He drives all his cars. Comedian in cars driving coffee.
It was a good series.
It was fine. It was great.
Yeah.
Do that.
Talk to people, you know.
Get your friends. You know, that's what I liked about Curb Your Enthusiasm. It was like, to me, I'm like, I don't want to see these rich assholes pretending to be someone else. I want to see like their homes and their cars and their underwear drawer. Mm. And even I know that Curb Your Enthusiasm did not was filmed in rented houses. It's not the actors' real homes, you know. I kind of like in my mind, I want to imagine that those places really were how they live and what they do.
Well, yeah, they build a world. You want to live in it.
And, you know, like in terms of the like dealing with drags and people like, why don't you do more stuff with Rue Girls or drag queens? And I'm like, I was just so, you know, there was a point when we were just felt like we were being treated really poorly by, you know, managers and publicists and even some of the entertainers at the time. And I was really depressed one Christmas and I started watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I was like, this happens to everybody. You know,
yeah,
I didn't
life.
Feel alone.
Yeah, it's life.
And part of it is, you know, when you're dealing with entertainers and showbiz people and, you know, people are trying to be comedians and trying to be entertainers and struggling. It's a very delicate, intangible place to be. So, you know, I forgive them, but it's like, for me, I'm like, I'm ready to move on to talking about other things, you know, like why, and I kind of agree with Jerry Seinfeld in a different sense is like the reason that we don't have as much funny, you know, gut busting comedy like we used to. Part of it is because Hollywood doesn't want to spend the money on it. They don't want to take the risks. All the streaming services don't want to pay for that kind of stuff. Mm. And so, you know, the kind of edgy humor that made people like spit their drinks out doesn't happen today. And so you have someone like Dave Chappelle just saying hurtful things and not really thinking about like
sometimes funny, but
sometimes
often
funny, but often it just seems like he's just whining, you know, mm-hmm. like what, you know, what's the matter with the trans people in the bathrooms? And I don't, you know, it just sounds like bad Bill Cosby material, you know? And I'm just like, come on, you know, you can do better. We can take risks. It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I think people feel very scared to take risks because to be a comedian and entertainer in this day and age mm-hmm. involves a lot more risks. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, her father was rich. She could fail upwards, you know? A lot of people, the young actors and entertainers and comedians these days, like, they're just worried.
Well, it's all Nepo babies.
It's all Nepo babies or people or past guests of ours. But, you know, for the most part, it's like it's hard to do that kind of material if you're worried about losing your job. Mm. And like we can say outrageous things on this podcast for the most part because we can't fire ourselves. You guys can fire us.
And some people have.
And some people have, you know, but part of it is to me is like I'm not interested in having a conversation with people who are out to harm me or not interested in listening back and forth. And so I think to get yourself canceled means to not be willing to have that conversation anymore. And if you're not, like, you know, Jerry Seinfeld doesn't need to. He's rich. Go drive your rich cars around. Yeah. Leave us alone.
Go to Brazil. Have sex with hookers. You know, I mean, come on.
Do lines of coke, whatever.
What do you care? You know, whatever.
What's the matter with cocaine and hookers in Brazil?
Now, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, is not the only drag queen making a comeback. Katara Ravash is making a comeback.
Who's she again?
George Santos. The ousted Republican congressperson from New York State who is doing cameos has tweeted, I've decided to bring Katara out of the closet after 18 years. And they are going to do cameos as Katara in drag.
Good for her.
And they say that 20% of it is going to go to charity, which is probably just them.
Yeah.
After fees and services and things like that come through.
So. A portion of the proceeds goes to
charity.
Charity. Yeah. And that portion is quite small. But no, I, you know, also George Santos promised that he was going to spill the tea on all the corruption that the Republicans and Democrats had in Congress.
And of course, and where is that tea?
And I'm like, honey, that tea is cold and you don't got any tea and then nobody wants to hear it. And if you do have it, where is it?
Well, I'll be interested.
Come on, Katara.
I'll be interested in to see if that drag has improved in the past, 18 years, considering what she looked like before. You know, with all these tutorials that they can have on YouTube, makeup artists, and, you know, I hope she brings her best.
Well, all I can say is God bless the booger queens, for they shall inherit the earth. But in this case, I hope you do not inherit nothing.
Mm.
She was terrible. Listen, he's a terrible person. Go away. Sashay away, please. Okay, so we're talking about
it. But if they're going to do anything, you know, it's you might as well do drag. Scam. Once it's Scamvestite, always is Scamvestite.
Yeah, that's true. There's International Day Against Homophobia is happening on May 17th.
May 17th. That's also Norwegian Constitution Day.
You once you get on a reality TV show, you are just
well. That's when they have forever. They have the big parades and stuff. I'll be working that day, so I will not be at the parade.
People don't know Mark was a star in Norway for a hot minute in the reality TV show Alt for Norge, which translates to the Great Norwegian Adventure. So, like the Amazing Race. You and how many? 15?
There was 12 of us.
12 contestants of American contestants of Norwegian ancestry retrace their roots in Norway and for fun and games and prize money. And you made it to the top four.
I did.
You're going to have to watch to find out what happens.
You can see it on our playlist on our YouTube channel on Feast of Fun. Just look at our playlist and it's there.
It's there. The whole season.
The whole season 9. Yes.
And what do you feel like was your highest moment?
I think episode 7 was really fun. And also episode 10.
What happens on episode 7?
Episode 7, we build parade floats with some farmers who look like they're dressed like, they're wearing like these weird net t-shirts that you would see like at circuit parties and things from the 70s. It was kind of like a retro look for them. But for us, it just read gay, gay, gay.
And people loved it. And you guys won. Spoiler alert.
We did.
But the Norwegians were like, the contest was very, very close.
It was not close. They always say those kinds of things to make everybody feel fine and like nice. Oh, it was very close. We're like, we blew our competition out of the water.
Well, I find myself like having just won a contest. Like, I do say that. Like, it was the competition was intense, you know, because it makes it better that you won.
I mean, it's the polite thing to say and you don't want to brag too much. But it was just like I knew going like I was like as we were making, I'm like, their float sucks, and I know it sucks because it's just a bunch of garbage. And they're just piling garbage on top of garbage. And it was their float was so bad, their float actually broke down.
Right.
And stalled the parade. So they had to, you won't see that in the final edit.
But when you're talking about the impact of you winning this contest, it's more impressive to say the person that lost to you was neck and neck.
Yes.
And that you were so good. That they still have to give it to you.
I'm the opposite. I'm honest. Ours was okay. Theirs just really sucked.
But it's the same thing. You're not being modest because saying it was really close, it makes you seem more impressive that you
won.
That's
true. So it was very close.
Yeah. It's like, what's the matter with winning a contest? Why can't people just accept the winnings?
So on May 17th.
Bump, bump. Oh, yeah. So May 17th, International Day Against Homophobia. And people, sit down and put a towel underneath your seat.
Oh, no.
Because a group of professional German rugby players who wear tight shorts and you can see everything.
Rugby players have great butts.
Are coming out as gay on May 17th. How many? At least more than 3. I was like, and right now there's 0. Party.
I want to come out with them.
I want to go to their Cocktoberfest.
Octoon, baby.
Cocktoberfest. Score. We're gonna score.
Are there any photos tonight of who might be coming out?
This is just a press release.
It's not going to be the attractive ones.
It's never.
No. It's not. There might be. Listen. All right. There's
gonna be. Why are you being so homophobic?
There's going to be 10 of them that are going to come out.
Yeah.
One's going to be fuckable. And the other, you're going to be like, all right, if I had to.
That's the one they're going to give the reality TV show.
I'm just kidding.
It'll be like the German, the gay bachelor. And they're like, and you win his heart. Batchdorf. But yeah, the bachelor TV shows are very popular with conservative Americans. So if you listen to this show, you're probably not a fan of The Bachelor. Maybe you are. I don't know. Do you like The Bachelor? I don't. I just, sitting through that, it's like, will you take this brown rose? I'm like, I don't know about that. However,
you know, I've watched a little bit of it here and there, The Bachelor, throughout the years, but it doesn't really appeal to me. It just always just seems very fake and just a setup. Like, it's not real to me at all.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just to me, I'm just like, you know, anytime somebody makes themselves to be the prize pig, it's more of a pig than a prize. You know, and it's like, think about the Sepúlveda in the
Prince Charming. Ooh, what a terrible show that was. Do you remember when that one guy spit on the other contestant? knew him
too. You know, I'm thinking, him. Did he spit on us?
No.
I one time, here's a story. I was sitting in a gay bathhouse many, many years ago. And there's a guy, not the same person, but I was just flirting and talking to him. And then he just spits on me like a llama. And he just sits there, like not like angry, like, did this turn you on? And I'm like, what the fuck did you just do? Why did you spit on me? He's like, I thought that would turn you on. And I was like,
didn't you meet him later on or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, then the next day we're out at a club and he's like, meet my friend. He's a rugby player. And I was like, get the fuck out of here. Very Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You should have spit on
me. I saw you spitting on me at the gay bathhouse. You were disgusting.
Who does that? That's not consent.
Yeah, spitting is not consent.
No.
So, you know, ask before you spit on somebody. But you had a friend one time that she liked getting spit into the mouth or something, or we're not going to say that.
She was actually, I think she was asking like if it was normal.
She asked you, is it normal for guys to spit in your mouth?
And I was just like, that's not, you know, I mean, if it happens, it happens and it can be hot, but it's like, it's not something I do. It's not something on the reg. It's not something I want on the regular.
Well, have you ever been asked or given spit action?
It's usually other fluids they're looking for.
I mean, you know, when there's no lube, you spit in your hand to, you know, stroke the eggplant, the old eggplant.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of spitting on somebody's mouth or skin as a way to rouse them, I don't, you know.
It's not
not my cup of tea.
So you don't want me to spit on you?
No.
No?
Well, maybe a little wet kiss. Billie Eilish opened up about her sexuality and mental health, mm-hmm. saying she's a miserable person.
She's not miserable.
She's depressed.
She's depressed. She's a depressed person.
She says, I don't want the fucking... I don't want to be the spokesperson for anything... I don't want to be fucking the role model for depression. What happens when I do some shit y'all are not going to like? She's got a point.
Mm-hmm.
She says that in order to live a normal life as possible, she goes grocery shopping, goes to book readings, and gets Chipotle.
Aw. Yeah, you got to leave the house. That's the number one thing they say if you're depressed. Get out of the house. Be out in the sunshine. Enjoy nature. Do things that... people do go shopping. Those connections that you make with people, just getting a coffee, saying those few words to somebody, being polite to somebody, opening a door for somebody, that makes a world of difference in your psyche. If you're just sitting home alone by yourself, stewing in your own piss, then it's not good for you. Just being outside in the sunshine, being around other people can help elevate your mood.
Say it when you're in a meeting. How do you do?
What?
That's from Song of the South.
What?
How do you do?
Yeah, say how did you do to people. You gotta be nice.
And if they don't say how do you do, slap them. That's from Song of the South, too.
No, it's not.
That's where Br'er Rabbit gets into trouble.
Because he slapped somebody?
He got into a fight because somebody did not say how do you do, and it caused problems for him. Yep.
Well, a lot of times you don't just have to say how do you do. It's rather than asking some people, especially when you're in customer service sometimes, rather than asking, because people don't know how to answer. Like, and you don't really care, do you? Like, say, hi, how are you? You know, it's better to say something like, welcome or good to see you.
I do say glad to see. I'm glad to see you.
It's great to see you.
Thanks for coming here. You know, we appreciate your business. You know, we're here to help.
Yeah.
What can I do for you? You know, that's the same. Any job in life is all about being kind and listening to people.
Mm.
If you can just do that, even if you suck at your job, you'll still be okay. Because there are some people, you know, it's like, learn from Amelia Bedelia.
What does she have to teach us?
She was one of those kids' books that we all read as kids. Kids to this day still know who mm-hmm. she is, you know. And so she was a ditzy Mary Poppins, a nanny. Who they would say, like, we need you to draw the drapes. So she takes a big piece of paper and draws a picture.
Oh, she was a literalist.
A literalist, yeah. So we need you to go to the garden and stake the tomatoes. So she takes pieces of steak and ties it on the tomato plants.
She's not very bright, is she?
She's a dumb, dumb maid.
Poor Amelia.
But, so they were like getting ready to fire her in the book. And you're like, oh my God, Amelia Bedelia's going to get it.
She's going to be out in the cold.
Out in the cold. Mary Poppins without her umbrella.
Matches in the winter.
Yeah.
Freeze to death.
Out in the cold without an umbrella. And so Amelia Bedelia, while she was being a ditz, she could cook. So she made strawberry tarts. And the father was about to fire her. really liked her strawberry tarts, wink, wink.
Oh.
And so he takes one, you know, big bite of a big strawberry tart and got all that juice in his mouth and was like,
so
I like
he screwed
this.
The help and kept her.
That's basically what is inferred in the book. Amelia Bedelia.
Getting ahead through life by giving head.
Moral of the story is be kind and compassionate.
Oh,
and you will get far in life even if you suck at your job. Just like Amelia Bedelia.
They do say be well liked and you will do well at work.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like people get jealous of me. You know, they're like, because I'm too charismatic. I'm like, I could do a whole TED talk on it, you know?
They say things like, you're too much.
They say, yeah, well, that's code for, you know, you're too gay.
Yeah.
And part of it is like, listen, you know, it's like, I refuse to have a battle of wits with an unarmed person. And so some of these people, you're like, I'm sorry that you're feeling that way. You know, it's like, I'm glad that we can talk about our feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And now go fuck yourself. Because, you know, part of it is, look, if your coworkers are jealous that you do your job well,
mm-hmm.
Is that a problem for your company? Is that like, is that something for you to worry about? No.
Are you worried that this movie's going to suck? The sequel? Do you think?
The Priscilla Queen of the Desert? Yeah. It could be, you know, this is the danger of all this, like, digging up you know, this is what Hollywood does now. It says, what was popular in the past? Let's rehash it. Let's go revisit it. And I feel like, you know, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert did what it needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a sequel to Girls Will Be Girls.
Is that the one you want? More?
That's the one. If you said to me, like, hey, this is one thing you need to explore.
But the thing is, though,
because their comedy was so vicious. And so wonderful in Girls Will Be Girls. That's you know, because all these other drag queens, even the Rue Girls, they're all like, even in the confessionals, even when they're like sitting around drinking their alcoholic and non-alcoholic beverages and they're insulting each other, it didn't get to the level of viciousness that Girls Will Be Girls gets into. And I'm a little bit worried that maybe like with Jerry Seinfeld, that we live in a world now that we're not willing to take those risks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, let's face it, like Coco Peru and Varla Jean Merman, even though they're some of the top drag artists, they're hustling, they're working their ass off. And, you know, if something goes wrong with their careers, they're going to have to be, you know, making shakes at Dairy Queen. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not sure if that's necessarily true.
No disrespect
to
the
working at the Quain.
Working at the Quain, but, you know, it's like... You know,
well, whereas like, you know, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, these guys are like, you know, they're all, you know, Guy Pearce is a bona fide movie star now. He wasn't.
They got money.
Then,
they got money. You know? They're doing this for fun.
Yeah.
Guy Pearce doesn't have to sweat it. He got Time Machine money. He got Memento
Hugo
money.
Hugo Weaving's got Matrix money.
He got Matrix money.
Terrence Stamp. What kind of money does Terrence Stamp
Superman
have?
Money.
Zod money.
Before Zod money. Before even he was rich before that movie even came out. He was a huge star. When they cast him as Zod, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And when they cast him as Bernadette.
He should have worn that Zod outfit for one of the drag numbers. It was very draggy.
It was very draggy.
You know, like a black pantsuit.
But black is an editorial.
Maybe they'll do that for the new film. Maybe he'll wear something like that.
Kneel before Bernadette.
Kiss the ring.
Kiss the ring. That would be good. You know, I'm like, listen, let's just have fun. Life is so short and so much misery in the world right now, you know.
It's going to be focused on that kid's going to have a kid. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be like AJ and the Queen.
Oh, God, no. I loved AJ. I'm like, Mark and I are one of the few people in the world that liked AJ and the Queen. I liked AJ and the Queen. I liked Star Booty.
Mm-hmm.
I know that RuPaul doesn't like Star Booty. I know most of the people involved in Star Booty don't like the movie. I know that most fans of RuPaul's Drag Race don't like Star Booty.
Most haven't even seen it or don't even know what Star Booty is.
They don't even know it exists. And it's to me, it's like, it's a wonderful film, you know?
Mm.
Dressed as a whore, as usual.
As per usual.
It's curtains for you. Beef curtains. There's so many good things in that movie. And it's like, bring it. Somebody, please. I guess it's up to me.
That needs a sequel.
Really, Star Booty, the search for International House of Pancake Makeup.
Star Booty, fracking the world.
Frack the vote. Frack the vote. You got a gift certificate for me? You got a gift certificate for International House of Pancake Makeup?
I do.
It's just
Cupcake. What's yours?
Hey you. What's your name? My name Cupcake. What's yours? And that, you know, all that traces its origins to Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and Paris is Burning, really. Hmm. And that film, you know, it's people have tried. There was a sequel made to Paris is Burning that was just atrocious.
No, there wasn't.
There was. Yeah.
What lies are you telling me?
Yes. What was it called? Sequel to Paris is Burning. What was it called? Oh. And it was just awful. And Kiki in 2016. And it just had none of the charm, none of the wit, none of the amazing moments, none of the vocabulary. And, you know, it was a real shame, you know, because it could have been so many things. But, you know, there will never be another Paris is Burning. And in a lot of ways, there will never be another golden moment like the 90s for LGBTQ films and dragon films. I mean, shit, you know, Robin Williams was on like half of those movies, you know? And like Coco Peru and Jackie Beats on the other half, you know? So I'm curious to see who will be in the new Paris is Burning movie. And certainly I'll be there front and center to relive some happy memories and see Guy Pearce wearing stilettos again.
I know.
Because, honey, that man's still fine, even at the age of, how old is he?
He's got to be like 57, right?
Pierce, age 56.
56? That was 56. Close.
He's just 4 years older than me. Damn. Fine.
He's a baby.
Oh, God.
Well, Pierce. We look forward to that. We'll give you updates as we learn of them.
Now, people are like, what happened to Lesbian Awareness Week and stuff? We ran into some problems at work and here with the studio, so we're still posting them as the weeks go by, because there's some really extraordinary interviews that we've done with these incredible, incredible women through the 20 years of doing this podcast. If you want to not wait, and you can just go to feastoffun.com/plus, become a member, and start combing through our archives. I mean, just search for the word lesbian. And I want to do a shout out to somebody on Instagram who gave me credit for the lesbian
on Instagram.
On Instagram, yeah, she did kind of like a thread about the real history of the lesbian pride flag. So their account is ACEXUAlien, a sexual alien, ACEXUAlien. And so it talks about the histories of lesbian flags and wrote some really nice and sweet things about me.
Oh.
And she said, you know, it's like,
will you share that with me?
Yeah, I did share it with you. You ignore all my messages.
On Instagram?
Yes.
When?
I did. It's also on my Instagram as well. And so it talks about the history of lesbian flags and talks about, you know, that despite some of the individuals involved in redesigning the lesbian flag being harmful or controversial, that the flag itself has some really wholesome, good roots, thanks to me. And you know, it was meant to be a celebration of feminine beauty and lipstick, whether it be lipstick lesbians or cougars. It was about, you know, giving acknowledgement and love back to all these amazing lesbians who have influenced my life and built a safer world and a better world for everybody. So, you know, they deserve their lesbian flag.
They do.
And if I don't, you know, part of me, I'm like, I don't know what it's up to lesbians to decide what their flag is going to look like, you know, and maybe it's part of the fun is that it's always changing, just like, you know, sexuality and gender is ephemeral. So maybe the flags that represent that also should be ephemeral too, should always be changing in new colors and new. This year, the flag's going to be pink, green, yellow, and white.
Well, maybe we need a Progress Pride lesbian flag.
Yeah, you can do it, you know, put a bunch of circles in it and triangles and a couple
mermaids.
A picture of Della Reese.
Ooh. Be like, touched by an angel.
Yeah. Babies.
The touched by the angel lesbian flag.
and be like, baby's going to be all right. Thank you so much for listening to Feast of Fun. And we'll have more fabulous podcasts tomorrow. We're going to be doing a podcast on anxiety. The anxiety at the gym. Mm-hmm. Why are you so scared to go lift some weights?
Yeah. How to get over it. How to deal with it. How to embrace it. How to love it. How to work with it. And how to work free of it.
Yeah. So it's a really good one. Because, you know, believe it or not, a lot of the listeners have been writing to me. And they're like, oh, my God, I'm so scared to go to the gym. How do you do it? And
I'm like, got you covered.
And I'm like, girl, I'm just as scared as you are. But it's like, you know, part of me is like, I love being around beautiful men. And there are some beautiful men at the gym of all shapes and colors and sizes. And I am a connoisseur. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.